Thank you, Anna. And thanks everyone for coming. So yeah, my name's Heather, and I'm hiding behind that thing. So my name's Heather, and my project is called Dynamics of Communicating Climate Change Information. The PhD started October 2009, but actually I just started my second year for various reasons. And within the sport, leisure and tourism capacity building cluster, it falls in two themes, being travel and sustainability and environment and landscape. I'm based in psychology, and my supervisors are Drs. Anna Rabinovich and Thomas Morton, and the case partner is the Met Office, and we've had and have various contact points there since the beginning. Originally it was Diogo de Gismayo, but currently it's Dr. Debbie Hemming, and both of those are based in the Met Office Hadley Centre, and that's the climate research part of the Met Office. And we also have Sarah Tempest and Andy Yateman, and they're based in communications. So the broad aim of this PhD is really to better understand the dynamics which go on when communicating climate change information, and to understand the communication process that goes on, in particular when communicating information with high uncertainty, which is shown to be a particular challenge in previous research, and hopefully present recommendations to overcome these challenges. Also, we hope to better understand how people respond to these climate change messages, and in terms of understanding the message and engaging with the message. And more broadly, this will hopefully lead to a better understanding of people's general attitudes towards climate change and sustainability, and perhaps potential for behaviour change. I'm drawing on psychology theory, so hopefully there'll be a contribution to theoretical knowledge in psychology, and as with all PhDs, there'll hopefully be a well-grounded, developed researcher at the end of it. So pretty much everyone has heard about climate change, or heard of global warming or the greenhouse effect, and though there was a slight decline following the Climategate incident at the UEA, the majority of people still believe that climate change is happening and global warming is occurring. And also, if you look at concern, if you look at fairly concerned and very concerned, just a broad straw poll measure of concern, about 83% of people are concerned about climate change. But these don't necessarily translate into pro-environmental attitudes, and if these concerns and beliefs do translate, and information do influence attitudes, there is an attitude behaviour gap, in that some people may have a pro-environmental attitude but not act pro-environmentally. So climate change is an important environmental and global and social and economic issue, so it's important to communicate this, and it's important to understand where these attitudes come from and how they may be influenced, and how this then may be translated into behaviours. So hopefully this project will do something like that. This is a broad framework with the communication process from the messenger to the message and to the recipients, and within it I've put topics and research issues that have been looked at in the context of climate change. So as you can see, the messenger, I couldn't really see so much research. There's not been too much looking at the messenger. Most focus actually is on recipients of the message. So how do people behave and what do they think? And things like habits and norms act as barriers potentially, and understanding that, you can hopefully overcome them. Heuristics, for instance, is another potential barrier, and a heuristic is it's a mental shortcut. So you have an image in your head, and if something is a very graphic image, this can potentially override any new information that's incoming. And within the message, there's been all sorts of issues with the message and ways to combat them, such as framing, but uncertainty has been shown to be a problem when communicating climate science information. Uncertainty is a range of outcomes, and this is usually expressed by probabilities for each outcome. However, people don't like uncertainty. People avoid messages that communicate uncertainty. Uncertainty can limit action. But there's been ways to minimize the negative effects of uncertainty, and that's by framing something in a positive way. Something is 20% likely will not happen, has a better effect than something is 80% likely will happen. But uncertainty in climate change is unavoidable. So the key challenge when dealing with uncertainty in this context is how to manage the communications which contain uncertainty in them. So in psychology, communications have been looked at through persuasion, and a common theory of persuasion is the elaboration likelihood model. This theory suggests that there are two routes to processing information. The central route, where we think about the information, we absorb it, and we weigh up its strengths, and we are influenced by that. But this has low capacity, and you have to be motivated to attend to this information, and it helps if there's personal relevance to you. The peripheral route, however, is it's where you're not influenced by the information, but cues peripheral to that information, such as the length of the message, or the person who's communicating it. And these peripheral cues are actually also known as heuristics, so rules of thumb. So if an expert is communicating a message, you would assume that experts are trusted, so this information would go via the peripheral route. And in the context of climate change, most people generally don't seek out information and think about it and absorb it and weigh up the pros and cons and the arguments and then act upon that. So this kind of information is likely to be processed by the peripheral route rather than the central route. Stereotypes are a kind of heuristic, and these are heuristics which represent groups of people. So not just, well, we've got stereotypes for lots of groups of people about what they look like and what they do, but they're also beliefs about people's traits and characteristics and behaviour. So in social psychology, stereotypes don't just describe what people do and what they look like. We try and explain the underlying components which create meaning to our perceptions of these social groups, and this may then trigger how we respond in interactions with those people. Social psychology theory has reduced the plethora of trait perceptions and grouped the main components together that they represent. So these are the three main theories that I'll be drawing on, and there's some debate amongst some of the contents and where they sit, but there is some commonalities as well. So the most common trait that we perceive for others is competence, and that's how smart and clever we think people are. And that was in the original theory, and also morality. How trusted is this person, and how moral are they? And then Fiske proposed the stereotype content model, and she included warmth and friendliness amongst the morality dimension. So this is still two-dimensional, but with warmth and confidence. And Leach said that people can be seen as being moral, but not necessarily warm. So he proposed a three-dimensional model of competence, morality, and sociability. So he split up the warmth dimension into sociability and morality, and going back to the original one. So there's some common themes there, but there's a little bit of a debate amongst them. So to bring it all together and to move on to what I'm doing and place into context, social psychology theory suggests that effective communication does not solely lie in the message, in the information alone, and you have to take into account who is communicating that message, how are they being perceived in terms of competency and warmth. So the broad question guiding this research is, are these processes relevant to communications of climate science? And if they are relevant, how are they relevant? So sub-questions would be, is communication a one-way process from the messenger to the receiver, or is there a relationship between the two, the communicator and the audience? And how does this information, how does this relationship influence the information being communicated? The methodological approach I'm taking is a mixture of qualitative and quantitative methods with various actors relevant to the communication process of climate change. So with climate scientists and climate science communicators as transmitters of the information and publics as recipients of the climate change communications. So this is really a triangulation of research methods and perspectives, and it's also an iterative process where you learn from one stage and it feeds into the next stage. So I've done phases one and two actually, and I'll briefly talk about that, and then phase three will come after I've completed the analysis and the write-up of phases one and two. But I've got some questions and where it could go, which I have at the end of this presentation, so it would be good to get your thoughts on that. So the aims of the interviews with climate scientists and communicators, really, it made sense to me to start talking to these key people. What do they see as the process of communication? What do they do? Who do they trying to communicate with? Who are their audiences? What do they see as effective communication? And if there's any barriers to that, to communicating effectively, what are they? So I interviewed 14 participants, 9 scientists and 5 communicators, and the interviews lasted about 40 minutes to 90 minutes, and they were recorded and transcribed. The analysis is being framed by three broad stages, I would say. The first being descriptive, so what are they saying? How do they describe the process of communication, and what do they see as the barriers? And this will be looking for themes and concepts in the data across all of the participants at a descriptive level. And then the next stage would be interpretive, so how do we get meaning from this? What does it mean? What kind of models are they using? And are they the same? Do they differ? How do they differ? And then I haven't started the last stage yet, but I hope to do it later on, and that's discursive. And so how do they construct their language, and how do they talk about the same issues? And do they differ in such discourse? Both scientists and communicators saw a wide variety of audiences, from policymakers to other scientists to publics. But for scientists, the primary audience was not the public. Yet for communicators, the primary audience was the public. For both scientists and communicators, effective communication was seen as the audience understanding the message being communicated, not behaviour change. However, there was no measure of success for them to know that the audience have understood the message that they're communicating. There were a number of barriers they both saw to communicating climate change, such as the distance and its abstractness at the moment, and the distance of it being in terms of location as well. But Another barrier is difficulty in communicating the uncertainties. And for scientists, they find it difficult to communicate the uncertainties to non-science audiences. And for communicators, the need to communicate the uncertainties and use the scientific language is seen as a barrier. So here's a quote of a scientist. It's very difficult to make a clear message from a very technical aspect or subject or result. That's very difficult to explain because there are so many different aspects. So that's where communicating the uncertainty has been quite challenging, to do it in a very simple and clear way, but also to make sure we're not ignoring or missing out any important details that need to be included in the message. Now that's quite representative of what how a scientist talks about uncertainty and their need to include it. And this is from a communicator. There is a 50% chance, plus or minus 10%, that our summers could be wetter if you take into account X, Y, and Z, and only if you look at this small portion of the country. However, if you look at this small portion of the country, there is a 25% chance, plus or minus 7.5 points, that it could be wetter in this part of the country, but only in June, because it is drier in July and August. So he was imitating a scientist, and he carried on with his role play for a while, and then he says, I'm making that up for effect because I'm like that. It is incomprehensible, scientifically accurate, completely robust scientifically, but if you provided that in the public domain, it is perceived as complete and utter gobbledygook and perceived as we don't know, and that's fine, we might not know, but if we don't know, let's say there's no answer for it yet, we need further research. So that's quite interesting that they're both talking about uncertainty as a barrier, but they're both talking about it in very different ways. So the need to include uncertainty and how to do that. How do we include all of this information communicating with the public? But for a communicator, the actual need to include the uncertainty is the barrier. So to overcome some of these barriers, including uncertainty and including the distance, scientists and communicators adapt their message to their audiences. However, like I said, maintaining the uncertainties and still relying on technical language is important for scientists, but for communicators using plain English and simplifying the message is important. And they also try and adapt their message in terms of content to try and make it relevant to people. Climate scientists would draw on a more climate way, trying to give examples this way, whereas communicators go for a more social and human and personal approach to the modification of their message. So here's a quote from a scientist. You have to make information more relevant to the public or whatever. What we did was we picked a climate event that people might remember, like the 2003 hot summers or the 1995 hot summers. And so those sorts of summers are, I've got a diagram actually, but you can use the uncertainty and say and work out when those sort of extreme summers might become typical in the future. Even with the uncertainty, you can kind of use that information, and so you're sort of saying the 1995 and 2003 summer heat waves would become typical by the 1940s, or something like that. Now, conversely, here is how a communicator would adapt the content of their message. Well, it could potentially, let's say, impact their health and their social well-being. Their financial well-being. Because those are the two biggies for people in the developed world. You know, we may accept that people in the developing world will have problems with finding food to eat and water to drink, but they're a million miles away from our lives and lifestyles. I think if you address the fact that climate change may impact health and wealth in the Western world, and you address those, then people are going to be more inclined to act on a global problem. So they're very juxtaposed in their message modification to audiences to try and get them engaged. So to sum up, really, getting as much scientific information is important for scientists, and the use of technical language. And for communicators, it's understanding the audience and the tone of voice that they use. And such as adopting a warm and friendly style of communication. So here's a quote again from another scientist trying to engage the public with a scientific with the climate mean average. Actually, so they can relate to climate events or they can relate to individual seasons, but I think anyone would struggle to understand what a 30-year mean climate change was. We did it on a 30-year mean timescale, so he's talking about creating a 1-year mean timescale rather than a 30-year mean timescale. We did it on a 30-year mean timescale, so for instance, when you look at that, you kind of see a strong signal towards drier summers and a strong signal towards, you know, warmer summers and winters and wetter winters. But I think one of the issues is that we're not showing the climate variability that's associated with that climate change. What we could have done, what I'd like to do in future, is provide these projections on 1-year timescales so that then you get the full, you're getting more towards, well, you're looking more at climate variability. So that's him talking about how he would like to communicate with the public in terms of climate mean averages and this kind of information. And this is how the communicator would engage with the public. So ahead of this bit, we were talking about communications, the different forms of communication, such as the website and brochures and things. So how we sound in them. So what's the tone of voice? So them is the communication. So what's the tone of voice? We try and adopt quite a friendly conversational tone of voice when we write, because we're seen as being quite an authoritative organisation, quite kind of scientific of distant organisation. And so we need to, if we're talking about science, we try and talk in a more conversational, warmer way. So we would say we and our. So that's all really interesting, all tying it together, but what does this mean? It seems to suggest that scientists and communicators are following different models of communication. Scientists prefer the informational model of communication, where informing the audience who are uninformed is important. It's very similar to the deficit model. We provide the information and that's it. Whereas communicators follow a more relational model of communication, where understanding the audience is important and relating with them. So how do audiences respond to these different kinds of communications? Do they respond differently when you're communicating the same scientific information? And how do they fare under situations of high uncertainty? So what we did was we had a little study and we tested that amongst people. So the aim of the study was to test these models of these styles of communication amongst publics and to see how that influenced perceptions of the communicator, and that's drawing on the stereotype work, and also how that influences the reception of the message, so how people engage with that. So the research questions here were, what perceptions of competence, warmth and morality of the communicator do these different communication styles signal? And do these perceptions help when communicating climate change information which contains high uncertainty? And does high uncertainty lead to reduced engagement with climate change, such as belief and intentions to action? The study consisted of 152 Exeter students, and they were given a pen and paper survey questionnaire, and on it there was a website, a fake website for a fake organisation, and we varied the communication style. So some participants had the open style of communication, and I'll show you in a minute how we varied that, and then other people had the distant style of communication. And we also wanted to see how this played out in conditions of high uncertainty. So we also varied the level of uncertainty. So there was a lower uncertainty condition and a higher uncertainty condition. After presentations of this information, we measured things like the perceptions of the organization. So this is drawing on the stereotype trait list such as trustworthiness and competence. And we also measured belief in climate change, so something like, in my opinion, climate change is happening. And we measured behavioural intention, so I intend to use the car less or recycle more. We measured some other stuff, but I'm not talking about that today as well. So how we varied the communication style. This is the fake website with the fake the Limford Centre. So the closer style of communication, we used the language such as we and our, as the communicator was talking about earlier on in the interviews. But to create a more distant relationship with the participants and organisation, we used a more corporate, exclusive kind of language. So we used the organisation's name. And varying the uncertainty, the high uncertainty condition, but they're all in probabilistic terms, but there was a range. So if we continue CO2 emissions currently, the Earth will likely rise by 2 to 4 degrees, or something will happen by, there's a 70 to 90% likelihood that something will happen. The lower uncertainty condition, we picked the middle number for these. So if we continue with emissions, there will be a 3-degree rise in the Earth's temperature, and there's an 80% likelihood. So there's still uncertainty, but there was one condition with high uncertainty and one condition with a lower uncertainty. So results show the factor analysis, and what a factor analysis does, it reduces larger number of items to a single item which represent the same construct. And the factor analysis seems to support Leach's model of stereotype content, in that there's competence, the three factors are competence, warmth, and morality. And then you can make scales from them later on. There was a trend that communication style influenced perceived trustworthiness of the communicator. So the open communication style conveyed a more moral and trustworthy messenger. And also higher uncertainty led to reduced belief that climate change was happening. So in the higher uncertainty conditions, less people believed that climate change was happening. Yet, though high uncertainty conditions reduces belief that climate change is happening, the style of communication can buffer against the negative effects of higher uncertainty, and when an open style of communication is used, this facilitates intentions to action in the higher uncertainty condition. And it's probably because you look for someone to trust in a higher uncertainty condition, so you're more engaged with them. So, to sum up and preliminary implications, scientists and communicators approach communication differently. Scientists focus on the informational aspects of communicating, and communicators focus on the relational aspects of communicating. And what's been shown is that the relational processes do shape how audiences respond to the information content. So the information and the relationship interact. And that's really important to know. So it may be that addressing the barrier of uncertainty isn't addressing uncertainty or focusing on uncertainty itself, but what could help is looking at the language peripheral to that and what that signals to the audience about the communicator. So that's the end of what I've done right now. And this is where I hope to go, because I've got 2 years left, almost 2 years left. I can't just sit around for 2 years. So I'm going to finish the analysis for the qualitative interviews and the 2 experimental studies I've done. And then I've got a few questions where this could go, but this is open to change depending on the how the analysis goes and what that, with the more depth analysis and what that comes up with. But how do scientists and communicators interact in a real life situation? And I think doing a focus group would be really fun there. It would be really interesting. Does providing information on action facilitate engagement with the message? Because it might be people are being communicated scientific information, but they don't necessarily know what to do with that information. So if you provide further information on what you can do to mitigate against the effects of climate change, it may facilitate engaging with the science. Is providing scientific information actually necessary to encourage sustainable behaviour? And does higher uncertainty in the message signal lower competence of the communicator? So that's pretty much all I've got to say for today. Thanks for listening.